This has to be one of my all-time favorite videos. It's about a company in the States that's called the Mayo Clinic, M-A-Y-O, Mayo Clinic. In other words, it's a healthcare provider. Now, what I want you to do while we're waiting for this video to load is to take a fresh, clean piece of paper, get it in front of you, okay, and I want you to write some subheadings down on it. Maybe two pieces of paper if you can, and you've got two major subheadings on either side of that piece of paper. So the first subheading that I want you to write down is intangibility. Okay, intangibility. Now, I'm going to give you a framework that I want you to use to think about this video. And as we're watching the video, I want you to kind of fill in the blanks under these subheadings if you like. So basically leave lots of space halfway down that page that you're looking at the moment. Write the next subheading, which is inseparability. Okay. Now, under the first subheading, intangibility, I want you to write these things. Leads customers to. Under intangibility, leads customers to. And then I want you to write underneath leads customers to. One, difficulty evaluating. So now we're basically refreshing our memories about what intangibility is and the challenges it presents to management. So first thing is difficulty evaluating. Second is perceived risk. So we talked about lots of risk because you can't touch, taste, and smell, feel the thing. And third thing is use price to assess quality. Okay, one way around intangibility is to look at the value of something, for example, to determine what quality it is. Under that, I want you to write management response. So we have intangibility leads customers to 1, 2, 3. And then under that we have management response. 1, reduce complexity. 2, tangible cues. And 3, word of mouth recommendation. So that's me telling you, for example, that Mayo Clinic is fantastic. So reduce complexity, tangible cues, and word of mouth recommendation. While we're watching the movie, I want you to think, because this movie is very good with intangibility, I want you to think about how you might take some of the examples in this movie and apply it to those things that you've just written on the page. So in other words, how does the Mayo Clinic reduce the complexity of the product? How does it give consumers tangible cues? What sorts of things does it do this? Okay, still going with the framework. Under intangibility, your second heading. Again, write leads customers to and management response. Under intangibility, leads customers to and management response.
Is it inseparability?
Oh, sorry, inseparability. Second one's inseparability. First one's intangibility, yep. So leads customers to, this is for inseparability. Co-produce. Co-produce. Okay, and under management response, write manage interaction and improve delivery systems. So these are the strategic ways to deal with the challenges of each of these four differences between goods and services. Okay, on the other side of the page, if you want to flip it over, got two more headings, perishability. Repeat the last headings. So under inseparability, co-produce, that's lead customers to co-produce, as in what we talked about before, customers are involved in the actual production of the service, and under management response, manage interaction. Do you get it? The subheadings are basically the same, but the leads customers to information and management results approach is different. So perishability, again, leads customers to. So next one you write is perishability. That's the third difference between goods and services. Perishability, leads customers to, and under that you write oversupply and undersupply. Okay, so perishability leads customers to oversupply and undersupply. Management response is the next subheading, like we've done with the other two. And then you write next to that demand and supply management. So management response, demand and supply management. Can I go to the next one? One more, heterogeneity. is your final heading. So the fourth difference, heterogeneity. Leads customers to. And under that you write uneven quality. And perceived risk. So uneven quality and perceived risk. And then your final subheading is management response. And next to that you write standardization and customization. Okay, now that's the framework you've got for this video. And I expect you to write things underneath those four categories that apply to those issues that customers face and that apply to those issues that management face to overcome those challenges. So while you're watching the video, look for examples that addresses each of those aspects of the differences between goods and services. No, it's okay, I pressed the wrong button. It is going to work.
Famous people come through its doors. From George Harrison to King Hussein, the Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota has grown to become a refuge for the weak and weary in search of hope and healing.
People would say, where can we go? What can we do? And the answer was, let's go to the Mayo Clinic. We'll go there. They will know.
The Mayo Clinic was founded in the late 1800s by Dr. William Morrell Mayo and his two sons, William J. and Charles H. Mayo. Back then, house calls were made by horse and buggy. The two brothers were skilled surgeons, and people flocked to them. As time went on, the Mayos added doctors with other skills and gave birth to a new idea, the group practice of medicine. People called it the Mayo's Clinic.
The patients could go through the clinic very quickly, see three or four different specialists, have a quarterback as a physician. He'd call another one of his colleagues in who was an expert in urology or an expert in endocrine and things like that, and very quickly get an answer to what was making you sick.
Word of the Mayo Clinic's ability to effectively diagnose and treat patients spread quickly, and in doing so, the brand was born.
Patients telling the story of coming to Rochester and being cured by the Mayo practice, by the Mayo brothers, and then by their associates. That's what happens. It's still the main way the brand is built. It's word of mouth, testimonials.
And with those testimonials, through the years, came tremendous success and growth.
What started as a practice in a five-story brick building today occupies more than 10 million square feet in Rochester. And that three-man team of physicians now totals more than 2,000. Together, the Mayo team makes up more than 45,000 people nationwide.
In the mid-1980s, the Mayo Clinic brand underwent a geographic expansion, opening facilities in two more states, Scottsdale, Arizona, and Jacksonville, Florida. That's also the time that the first marketing department was formed. And soon after that came the Mayo Clinic's first consumer publications.
The Mayo Clinic Health Letter and the Mayo Clinic Family Health Book were two brand extensions that were created in the mid-1980s. And that really began this process of trying to leverage the equity of the brand in some other area than direct patient care.
The Mayo Clinic would become a name and brand that people could trust, and one that many were aware of, despite the fact that it had never been formally advertised.
It was a brand that was built by what it really was, rather than some creation through advertising or other marketing communications.
So what was the Mayo Clinic brand, and how would it become the top choice for people in need of care?
When other people couldn't diagnose it, it was diagnosed at Mayo Clinic. When other people couldn't treat it, it was treated at Mayo Clinic. So then the patient comes home and tells that story, and the word spreads.
The Mayo brothers believed that collaboration and the collective wisdom of many people would result in a new and better way to care for patients. And they were also mindful of the environment in which that care was carried out. From the moment patients enter the Mayo Clinic, they're greeted with elaborate artwork, paintings, glass sculptures, abstract drawings. There is also music for patients to enjoy while they're waiting for appointments.
The Mayo brothers in the early practice traveled extensively and thought that it was important to kind of break out of the mold of the usual traditional hospital and aseptic and kind of a sterile-looking place and create a better atmosphere for the patients, because it's just they bounce back faster.
Patients visiting any one of the three clinics can expect to encounter that same soothing experience. When it comes down to it, it's really all about the patient and trying to create an atmosphere that is both comfortable and healing. So how is it that an organization that only spends 0.25% of its gross revenues on marketing each year can maintain such a strong brand? The answer lies in its reputation and in its ability to deliver excellent care. The nonprofit Mayo Clinic has earned its name as a world-class research center and specialty care provider, as well as a fine educational school of medicine. In 1950, two Mayo physicians were awarded the Nobel Prize in Medicine for the discovery of cortisone. Mayo was among the first to perform successful open-heart surgery. They also carried out the first FDA-approved total hip replacement, and Mayo introduced the CT scanner to North America. All milestones that through the years have helped to build this pristine brand. So you might think that it would be relatively easy to manage this well-established brand. Not so.
The brand is so strong, it is so highly regarded, it is such a valuable commodity, that there is a great concern about messing it up. And we have a brand that's equivalent to Coca-Cola. I mean, we just have this gigantically valuable brand.
That is one of the reasons why Mayo Clinic formed the Office of Brand Management, to try and have a clearinghouse for knowledge about external perceptions of Mayo Clinic. They also wanted to give physicians a better understanding of the brand as it began to branch out into different areas.
Leaders in our institution said, let's really understand how powerful the name is, how valuable the name is, what it takes to keep the name at that level, what possible things maybe put that name at risk.
So they conducted a study to find out what people thought of the Mayo Clinic. What they learned was that patients thought they were the best medical practice in the country. With that information, the challenge became trying to figure out a way to preserve that image, to really make sure that patients who encountered the Mayo Clinic in every geographical location would come away with the same excellent experience. But the branding strategy didn't end there.
I would say that Mayo Clinic brand management has two key objectives: protection, but also enhancement. If it was just about protection, we would stop everything we're doing, we'd just take care of patients in Rochester, Jacksonville, and Scottsdale, and we would just play it safe. We're not interested in just playing it safe.
The Office of Brand Management works carefully to preserve what the public has come to expect from the Mayo brand, while also making sure to move the brand forward at the same time. All the while, keeping in mind that it's really difficult to get a handle on managing what essentially is a service.
The brand was really what existed in the minds of American consumers. We own the brand, and we control it to some degree, but it isn't something that's tangible that we possess. The value only exists as it influences the minds of Americans and people around the world to desire our services.
Influencing the mind of the patient is a very delicate matter, made more complicated by the concern that calling the Mayo Clinic a brand might trivialize its existence.
As soon as you say that Mayo Clinic is a brand, there are those who will say, I don't like talking about Mayo Clinic like it's a soap. This is not what we're here to do. We're not here to sell soap. We're here to, you know, advance the science of medicine and take care of people who are ill.
As it turns out, those who are ill would rather go to Mayo Clinic than any other specialty care facility in the world. Those were the findings of a Mayo brand equity study carried out in the 90s, which also found that the overall awareness of the clinic was 84.3%. The strongest associations with the Mayo brand by consumers were scientific research, cancer treatment, and cardiac care. Other top associations with the brand were excellence, care, and compassion.
People trust Mayo Clinic. People get diagnoses from other doctors, and they come to Mayo Clinic for, very often, a confirmation of what other people have heard them. But once they hear from Mayo Clinic, they say, okay, I accept it.
People believe that Mayo Clinic is here for the patient, not for profit. It's perceived as a humanitarian institution that will put the patient's needs first.
Preserving that belief is fundamental. That's why sometimes partnerships don't work out. There is the need to negotiate a common ground with other companies who would like to use Mayo's strong name and image.
If we partner up with somebody who wants to promote us too strongly, you know, it's not going to work because we're going to feel uncomfortable and we're going to turn this into a product instead of into what we are.
In the service industry, the onus of maintaining a good reputation and name depends largely on the way the service is delivered.
The most important thing is that we keep delivering this product and we not lose sight of the fact that we are a healthcare provider brand. And all of the brand equity that we have in the minds of America really depends on our continuing to deliver that.
I think you've really got to make sure that the employees, the people delivering the brand, understand exactly what they are delivering and why they're delivering it and how to deliver it and what the brand is really expected to do.
Mayo Clinic marketers say that keeping the brand strong well into the future will rely primarily upon the day-to-day interactions and the experiences that patients have here.
Great brands can survive a long time, as this one has, as long as they remain relevant and they don't do anything stupid.
The Mayo Clinic brand has managed to survive its founders by more than half a century by staying true to its mission to keep the needs of the patient first, a mission experienced by more than 6 million people who come here to seek answers to what they believe is the truth. For the Pearson Video Library, I'm Pat Lurie, Business Now.
Okay. So let's talk about what you found in that video.